people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to stall way the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go down Fairs another tier, and about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
The California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The 605, the 101, the 101, the 101, the I-10, the 210, the 605, the 101, the 405, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice.
Welcome, 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 everyone, planet Earth, to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis, our document person for the evening, our professional photographer, Adam L. Murray, soundboard, Jeremy Hansen, and our in-studio guest tonight, a man that has tied the thread between bands like Metallica, Devo, Green Day, Deftones, The Killers, Disturbed, My Chemical Romance, B-52s, It's Casual, Mastodon, Alice in Chains, director of videography, Robo Shobo. How are you?
Hey, pleasure to be here.
Hey, thanks for coming. Man, you're like the thread that ties all those major bands together. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I'm kind of all over the place.
So, can you move your mic in a bit?
Sure.
Yeah, very cool.
How's this?
Oh, that's great. Now we can hear you loud and clear. Yeah, it's really exciting because you're actually a guest that has a lot of Redline history. And a lot of my guests that I have on, like James Rhoda, who produced Sound City, you know, Rick Kosick from Jackass, like they've rolled the red line a few times and have, you know, some experience with it. But you actually, at one point, used it, or I'm not sure if you still do, but using your daily routine to get around. So you know the public transportation system in Los Angeles very well, correct?
That's right, yeah. when I first moved out here, I was on, did not use the cough button.
I know we were drooling on this cough button and like, I have no idea that it even existed here. And Robert's like, man, look at this cough button. I'm like, I guess when you cough, you press that. But anyways, like, hey.
Yeah. So, when I first moved out here, I was sleeping on somebody's couch, living on the west side of town.
Okay.
Which has zero access to the subway really. Mm. But within a month or two, I had moved out to the valley and discovered that there was a subway. So I got myself a bike and I would take the, it's I forget the name of it. It's the very last stop on the red line.
Oh, it's the North Hollywood station at Lancashire.
That's the one.
And when you go downstairs, you only have one direction to go. It's towards Hollywood and downtown.
Yeah.
Because that's the last stop.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I was seeing a girl who lived right at the Hollywood and Western stop.
Okay.
So I'd ride my bike to that stop and I would take it into town. And I got excited about having that when I did not have a car. And I rode it for about 4.5 years.
So I mean you've seen the ridership grow in those last 4.5 years, I'm mm-hmm. sure, because mm-hmm. more people knew it was available.
Yep.
And was very accessible between downtown and the valley. Pretty yep. convenient actually.
Yeah, I had to get a car a few years ago.
Just, right, because you got so busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I have been down there recently. I they have like the turnstiles and the tap cards. And
yeah, it's crazy now.
Because I used to have, you know, like the paper tickets.
Yeah, they would punch out the paper tickets. Remember that? And you would buy a day pass for $5 and just keep that in your pocket all day.
Yeah.
Now it's like
practice origami with them when I'm riding the train. Got really good at making cranes and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. So now it's like everything is like digitized. Like everything is on a tap card. Mm-hmm. And if you buy a monthly pass, they want to put your face on it and like put like a barcode. So it's like, you know, Big Brother is in full effect, Robert.
Nice.
You like that, huh?
Yeah.
So where are you from, actually?
I'm from Florida.
Okay.
I was born in Louisiana, and then I grew up in the Panhandle.
Wow.
My dad's like a helicopter pilot in the Gulf. And so I grew up in the South. And then after I dropped out of college, I made my way out here.
What was your major in college? Let me ask you that.
Well, I actually, I went in a little bit early. Like I wanted to study neurology, was my interest. And then I kind of, in the next year or so, kind of went all over the place. I was, doing critical theory and sociology and art history and basically screwing around and not really doing anything that I was supposed to be doing, kind of lots of extracurricular activities, was starting to develop an interest, I guess, in filmmaking and, you know, did illustration work and animation and stuff like that. So,
from that point,
basically everything I do now.
Right. So from that point on, when you were in school for, you know, neurology and, to, you know, to when your first video actually was made, in between, was it just, were you just being self-taught or were you taking other classes at other, schools?
I'm pretty much self-taught. I mean, like my career in school, like, you know, again, I was, you know, really into the, like the sciences, like my first year. And then after that, it was more like liberal arts, but it was very academic. I wasn't really, taking a lot of classes to learn about filmmaking or photography. So, my parents both do a lot of photography. So
you've been around it.
I learned from them. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, it was kind of a sort of a family thing. We'd go out and shoot stuff together and, you know, have projects. Like our laundry room, we'd turn it into a dark room. And
so they were pretty
black and white prints and
immersed in it enough where you would go out with them to take the photos and then see the end result in your laundry room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And from there, like, where would the pictures go? Would it be like maybe in a frame at the house, or was there ever photography shows, or would they sell them?
They have put stuff in photography shows before, but
wow.
You know, I think it was mostly just, I almost feel like it was more just like the process of doing it. Like it was just, you know, something we did together that was fun.
Right. From the idea of, hey, imagine this in a picture in a frame, to actually doing it and seeing the end result.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So would you say those years of experiencing that and seeing that was kind of a catalyst for you to do what you do now?
Yeah, to an extent. Yeah. I mean, I come from a family that I think is, really creative, you know, people that like to build things, that like to make things. Like my mom's kind of she's like an art quilter. She does textiles. Like my dad does a lot of photography. You know, as a kid, I liked doing stop motion a lot.
Wow.
Took the video camera, would, you know, take Star Wars toys and stuff and make a little stop motion thing.
Do you have any of those old footage?
Actually, I probably do. I'm sure I can dig up some of that stuff and find it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's a whole log of material you have from,
yeah,
you know, from those days. Now let's fast forward to you coming to Los Angeles. So how long have you been here?
I've been here since I guess about 2004.
2004. So that's like a good 9 years.
Yeah.
Almost a decade.
Almost got a decade in.
Yeah, yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
No, I mean, now your resume of being a music video director is so impressive, and it's so eclectic in the bands that you work with. I mean, it's, you know, it's Green Day, it's Metallica, it's, you know, Deftones, it's Mastodon, it's Devo, B-52s, Coheed and Cambria. You know, you worked with me on my band, you know, It's Casual. And that was the first video we did, which was a great segue into the second one, The Red Line. And to this day, I mean, people just think like the end of that video, when the skirt blows up on the mannequin, is so poetic. That's what I keep hearing, you know, just some of your choices are so just, you know, you have a lot of finesse, you know, and I see that come across on all the videos, even the ones with bigger budgets. My question to you is, the world you're in now, when did you exactly start to enter that world here in Los Angeles, and how long ago?
Well, like I said, I was working on my thesis in school, and kind of flipped out and dropped out, a little bit of a nervous breakdown. So I went home to live with my folks for a couple months. While I was there, I started playing around with like After Effects, was teaching myself, you know, how to do animation. There was like a local singer-songwriter who had seen like some work up like in a record shop that I'd done, like some drawings or something. He asked me if I, you know, knew how to do animation. And I was like, not really, but, you know, I'm sure we can figure it out. So, you know, he gave me a song. We came up with this concept and put together this video that he wound up sending out to some festivals. Like it went to like CMJ had like a video lounge that year, and they picked it up for that. So that was encouraging. And then I went down to like a little conference in Orlando that was about the state of music video directing. This guy named Will Brown, who used to do an online publication called MV Wire that was like in-depth interviews with video directors. So I got to meet some commissioners. I met some people who had flown out from LA, and somebody who, you know, regrettably turned out to be kind of crazy. Basically bought me like a plane ticket and was like, why don't you fly out? You know, I'm starting a production company. You can come work for me.
Very nice.
And so I took a chance. I came out. It didn't quite work out, but I was determined to not go back to Florida. The weather out here is gorgeous. You know, you guys have hills and you know,
so you would
flat
say,
out here.
So you
it's
would
amazing.
Say landscape and weather, LA wins.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've always like, you know, Los Angeles to me, it's like the best city ever. It's my favorite place to be.
I agree.
And you know, once I was here, it really felt like home. So I actually didn't go back to visit anyone in Florida for like maybe 3 years, I think, because I was afraid that I wouldn't get back here. So
there
I stayed.
Was like a paranoia factor.
Absolutely. So you know, I did whatever I had to do. You know,
stay away.
I couch surfed. I got odd jobs, and you know, so yeah, it was like that.
And then, tell me about your first music video you did out here in Los Angeles.
God, I can't remember. I'm trying to remember because I was just doing a lot of like weird kind of little like animated things for people. So
let me ask you this: when you went into the entered the world of music videos, mm-hmm. At the level that you're at now, with the Metallicas and the Deftones, mm-hmm. Were you being represented by someone and they got you in that door?
Yeah, I was.
Let's talk about that.
Okay, yeah, we can do that. So I guess basically what happened was there's a place in Studio City called Hammerhead.
Right.
It's a really cool post house run by some amazing people, like the guy who invented the concept of morphing was there. Remember like the Michael Jackson, like the black or white video where they keep kind of transforming. Basically a lot of like groundbreaking like CG work was developed by these guys in the 90s. And a friend of mine, who was a friend of somebody that I knew from school, I met them maybe at a party or somebody gave me their number, and they got me a job like working as a PA. And I was like, you know, I was borrowing somebody's car. I was driving around town. I was delivering hard drives to, you know, places to get film transferred and stuff like that.
This was before Dropbox, right?
Yes. These are like massive like Cineon files, like on many physical hard drives that I would have to ferry back and forth across town. So I did that. I learned how to rotoscope, you know, cleaning up dust and scratches on film, just little things like that.
But you really learned your chops there, it seems like.
I did. And they were very, very nice to me. Like, you know, they gave me a key to the place and they told me, you know, I could use their computers after hours. So like I was continuing to like, you know, learn more about, you know, keying green screens and doing animation and, you know, just really, really kind of learning at my own pace on my own time using their equipment, because I didn't have a computer for a couple more years after that. I was able to put together a reel, and I remember I basically took the bus to various production companies.
Really?
I had a list. I went to production companies around town.
MapQuest also?
Well, one of them I remember was kind of like up in the hills, like just past like Hollywood and Highland.
Right.
And it was in a neighborhood where, you know, once you get to a certain place, you get off the bus and you have to go on foot. Like the buses just don't run through these neighborhoods, even though they seem to like, you know, be very open to traffic. I have no idea. I mean, I have my theories as to why public transit doesn't run up there, but you have to get off and then walk.
Sometimes quite a ways mm-hmm. to get into like the
exactly.
hills and stuff.
So there was like a house out there that had a production company running out of it. And so like I had to like walk up there and deliver like a DVD, like in person and stuff like that. So, but the production company that I wound up going with was called Revolver.
Okay.
And I went to give them a DVD and nobody was there that day. So I just left it on their doorstep. And I was actually surprised. I got a phone call from them like a couple weeks later. The rep there, she was like, you know, usually we throw out unsolicited reels, but, you know, this is pretty interesting. This is cool. It's got crazy stuff on it. You know, if you need anything, let us know. And I didn't really know what that meant. So I just said, well, you know, if you could get me a camera and a green screen, like I want to shoot a video for a band. And she's like, okay, well, you know, we'll see. And she hung up and I was like, oh, I shouldn't have asked for that, because I thought maybe that was a little too forward. And they called me back like an hour later and was like, you know, we have a DP who has his own camera and we can send out a PA with a green screen. And you just find a location and a time and we'll help you shoot it. So that's what I did. And a friend of mine, Michael Johnson, who I went to school with in Pensacola. Actually, we didn't go to school together. He's a couple years older than me, but I met him when I left school, and we stayed in touch. He's played in, there's a band on Sub Pop called Holopa.
Okay.
He was on. He played in the Lilies for a while.
I know that band.
Great, great psychedelic band. Yep. And now, you know, he has a band called Ape School, which is amazing. And actually did a few animated videos for him many years back. He told me about this band called Fraustats that was doing like their residency over at Spaceland, which is it Satellite now?
It's called the Satellite now.
So yeah, but back when it was Spaceland,
right?
You could smoke in there, and it was awesome. I went and approached this band and you know, said, hey, do you guys want to make a video? And they're like, sure. So my girlfriend at the time was working as a receptionist for this medical building over on Venice, and one of the floors was being renovated. So we went in there at like 11 o'clock at night, set up a green screen, and shot a music video on this like hospital floor that was under construction. And then the place I was working at let me put it together on their computers after hours. And
so you really created your world. I mean, you know, nothing was handed to you. You just, when people opened doors, you really stuck your hand in and said, hey, I'd like to do this. And they were receptive, and you worked extra hard, you know, worked late hours to make the end product happen.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, if somebody offers you help, take it, you know, it's, and do the same for other people when you see them, you know, looking for advice.
Right. Now let's fast forward. Something interesting. Now, I heard a rumor that the Metallica video that you directed was originally, they were going to ask Sean Penn to do that. Is that true?
I have no idea. That's crazy.
You never heard of that? No.
I didn't know that.
I don't know. I think my source is pretty legit, but
it's possible. I mean, it seems possible. Like, didn't they do a video with didn't Darren Aronofsky do a video for them?
Yeah.
Like them and they and Lou Reed, their collaboration, I think.
Yep. Let's talk about that. How did you fall into the world of Metallica?
Well, I guess it's a good question. I'm still not sure. If I piece it together, I think what happened was I had just done a video for Mastodon that people liked, and I think that's what it was, because I think it was
That was for the first record, right? On Warner Brothers.
It was for Divinations.
Yep,
it was the one where they unearth like Brent's like a caveman, and he like winds up killing them all with a guitar. And eats them.
So that was somewhat of a catalyst to throw you into the Metallica world.
Yeah, I think the way that I got into it was because I had somehow, I was doing a lot of sort of like screamo hardcore type videos. Like
sure.
I did something for like Poison the Well, for Blood Brothers, you know, just and then a bunch of like really really low budget like screamo stuff. And so my reel was full of all these little micro budget, like hard videos that were, but also like totally bizarre, kind of out in left field. Like one was like a mummy.
Really unconventional stuff.
Yeah. Right? Like, I mean, like the Blood Brothers thing was like, it was all made out of cardboard. We like had this guy dressed up like a mummy, and he was attacking skyscrapers that had kabuki makeup on. They were like holding like little cardboard flame things in their hands. It was, and then there was like CG people running around.
And that comes from the mind of Robo Shobo. That's
your thing. Trying to do some fun, weird crap. And so I think that's how I got to do like the first videos for Mastodon. And I think Divinations went so well that, you know, I was able to pitch them on doing Oblivion. And Oblivion went on to do very well. And so I think that's how I got the chance to pitch on Metallica. So initially,
right,
it was actually kind of a concept that was a little more of a like steampunk War of the Worlds kind of thing.
Okay.
That was supposed to be like this like lost like Russian film from the 20s. Like James and Kirk really, really into like 50s science fiction. So we kind of like updated it and made it more of like a Cold War story. So, but yeah, that video, it's kind of a video. It's kind of a short film. It was definitely me trying out a lot of things.
So how long was the production time on that?
A month and a half.
Really? And was it all in Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shot at the Linda Vista Hospital over in...
Boyle Heights. You guys shot it there, really?
Yes. I shoot there as much as I can. So I shot a video for Disturbed over there too.
Okay.
Called Asylum. That place is awesome.
You like that?
Yeah, it's really cool.
So a month and a half in Los Angeles, and was all the production there, or was it scattered around town as far as
locations? A month and a half for post-production.
With post.
Production itself was only a day.
A full day?
Yeah, it was like an 8-hour shoot, I think. We went in, we shot like 16mm like color reversal film, and tried to make it look like an old, authentic documentary. And then the rest of it's all animation.
Wow.
So, and that process was about a month and a half.
Right. And that video went on to get some recognition with an award, right? I mean, I think that was it.
I didn't get any awards, but Rolling Stone liked it.
Right. Like, it was a top three of the
like
year.
One of their favorite videos that year. Kanye West blogged it, which...
Kanye blogged your video.
Like, Kanye West liked my video.
What does that mean though, right? That's like... Yeah. If you have a lot of numbers on Twitter, that means a lot.
Yeah. Well, this was like, I mean, that was a few years back. So it was like when he was first starting like his design blog. Like he was really into like design and art and stuff. And so that was kind of a cool thing. But
Was now being involved with a band that size, you know, I mean, they're the biggest metal band of all time. Mm-hmm. Now you worked with them. I mean, what do someone like you... and your background, learn from an experience like that?
Basically not to think about it too much.
Don't overanalyze it?
I think I would have shut down. Like, I think I would have like freaked out if I'd thought about it too much, the fact that I was working with Metallica.
Like, I'm here with Metallica, would have flipped out. Yeah,
it was crazy. So I kind of had to just, you know, anytime I work with an artist, like, I kind of just...
detach.
Try not to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a job. You know,
right.
Just kind of roll with it. Those guys are really nice too.
Yeah. Good experience.
Super nice.
Now, out of the whole group, who were the guys you dealt with the most? Was it all of them?
I think it's, you know, mostly like James and Kirk.
Okay. The two guitarists mm-hmm. in front of me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I, after the video was done, I got to, I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the venue. There's like a big, like sort of a coliseum.
Oh, the Forum?
Is it the Forum? Is that, it's the one where Prince like played like 20
shows
in
Inglewood, by the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you went to go see them there.
Yeah, I saw them there.
After the video was made?
Mm-hmm.
So you saw them again.
And they gave me like all access passes and backstage passes. And I got to go backstage and say, hey, and I had dinner with them.
Really?
That was cool.
So, I mean, it was a great follow-up to the video coming out. And they were really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I just remember they were like, what do you want to eat? I'm like, do you guys have any pizza? And they're like, we've got whatever you want. Just want a slice of pizza. So
in Metallica's world, you can have whatever you want, but you settle for the slice of pizza, right?
It has like some good Indian food back there.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was hungry for a piece of pizza. So, but then Dave Grohl was standing outside.
Right.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, so you're in that Metallica world and mm-hmm. Dave Grohl's coming to their show and they're offering you anything you want to eat.
Who I actually didn't, I didn't get to meet him because...
were things crazy because you were like talking to Metallica? And...
Yeah, I mean, they're super polite. They were just like, well, you know, we'll see him in like 5 or 10 minutes. Like
some people,
having dinner with Robert, you know.
Some people don't have manners these days. So they seem well-mannered.
Well, they're very nice. I mean, I wouldn't think that they would, you know, like prioritize me that way, you know.
Right. I mean, like they want to give you the mutual respect time, like, you know, hey, we have other people here to see us, but you know, we're with you.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. It wasn't like I got shoved backstage. Here's a handshake. Here's a photo.
See you're
you
out of here.
Thanks. Bye. No, they're incredibly
That's great.
Nice people.
That's great.
Yeah.
So when you watch that video today, I mean, do you ever watch it and just say like kind of have a flashback of all the work that went into it? Because That's a pretty long post-production. It seems like five and a half, 6 weeks.
Yeah, I actually...
is that your longest post-production on any video?
I guess so. I feel like I've had something that took like maybe 2 months to finish, but that one was definitely the most intense. Like, it had the most people working on it.
Was that your biggest coup you've ever had on a production?
As far as like post work, like the animation and stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I do a lot of the work myself.
I mean, you like to do it.
I do. But on that particular one, it was great. You know, I had 3D animators and 3D modelers. And
so how many different, post production spots were going at once? I mean, was it all done under one place with multiple people, or was this person over here and that person over there?
I was outsourcing it all over the place. Like, wow. Because the animation, I wanted to look like really authentic, like to the 40s. So I actually hired a matte painter to paint all of the backgrounds by hand. And then I had,
so it was all manual.
Yeah. And then I had a gaming artist who sculpted like all of the zombies and those characters. And, then I had somebody else devise like a shader to make it look like it was like cell animation. Like, I didn't want it to look like 3D. I wanted it to look more like, you know, like the old, like the Fleischer Superman cartoons.
Yeah.
What they did was they rotoscoped actual actors and then painted the cells. So those were all like actors that they basically traced off and turned into stylized animations to speed up the process of what they did. And that's why they look that way. So what I did was, I was like, well, it'll be faster to animate everything in 3D, but then render it out to look as though it was done, you know, like these rotoscoped Superman cartoons.
So there was a lot of time, I mean, during the production for the hand manual labor that was done on the production, but that translated into making it easier in post. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, because I think that project could have easily taken like 6 months or more to do if we hadn't, you know, if I hadn't thought up these various like shortcuts to do like in CG and then
right.
kind of bringing it together that way.
So I got one for you. So here you are, a video director, and you work with the biggest metal band in the world, Metallica. And what does one say in your position? Okay, I just worked with Metallica. Where do I go from here? So tell us, where did you go from there after that? Like, what did you go into?
Well, God, it's such a blur. I'm trying to remember what happened next.
Was it more Mastodon, Green Day? I feel like it's some Coheed.
Yeah, no.
Disturbed.
Yep.
Salt and Sea.
Did some work with Disturbed. Went out to Salt and Sea.
Yeah, I heard that was gnarly.
Very trippy, yeah.
Yeah, like what's going on down there?
we tried to like build like a refugee camp out there, which was crazy.
Yeah.
But everybody down there is really nice. Like we hired like local crews to like help us build stuff. Like, a lot of our talent was locally sourced. Like, I'm actually a couple of people who helped build stuff down there. Like, I keep in touch with them on Facebook.
That's great.
So yeah, lovely people.
So they're all great people, nice.
Yeah.
You know, and that was your first time down there?
Crazy and post-apocalyptic looking, and then it's just full of like really just sweet people.
Post-apocalyptic looking, but the nicest people in the world.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you go down there, like, you know, you're on the edge of the water and like you're looking at all this gravel and stuff, and you realize that it's not gravel, it's millions and millions of crushed fish bones. There's just dead fish everywhere. Like, it's...
That's so gnarly.
It's insane. And then like all of like the abandoned trailers that are falling apart. And
I mean, it's not too easy on the eyes out there.
I mean, I love it. You know,
yeah.
I love that kind of stuff. So
now when you did that Disturbed video, I mean, was that location your choice?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, they'd written like this really heavy song that had like an environmental message. And I was like, you know, let's try to create like, you know, what the first world would look like, you know, after global warming, like after like a serious global, you know, catastrophic
disaster.
Meltdown, you know, so just trying to get across like the notion of scarcity and famine and all the things that are going to come, you know, in the coming years, probably.
Yep.
So
how long were you out there in the Salton Sea?
About 3 days.
3 days.
Yeah. Like a day to build and then 2 days of shooting.
And was there any other locations where you guys actually did production, or was that it?
I ran around a little bit. We just did pickups to kind of show people like in present day, like, you know, grocery shopping, watering their lawns, stuff like that, to sort of contrast with, you know, this sort of horrible future world that we were creating. And one thing that I came across was, got to know Long Beach a little bit better, like Telegraph Hill. I had no idea how much oil is drilled out of
Los
Angeles and out of this area.
It's mega. It's a
crazy.
Lot.
It's crazy. Like you go into these like little suburban neighborhoods and there's like, you know, an oil donkey that's just like, you know, pumping away in somebody's front yard. And there's like a big, huge sign that says, you know, warning, these fumes may cause cancer. And it's
kind of heartbreaking. So
I got these amazing shots of like, you know, this like beautiful, like, you know, like this like perfect little sort of pink suburban house with, you know, this oil well just pumping away in front of it. It's surreal. It's crazy.
It's like that perfect textbook looking house. Like we were supposed to get married and live in a house like this with a white picket fence. Mm-hmm. It was that kind of vibe, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, so much of it, like, you know, there's like slant drilling and stuff that goes on in LA, you know, over in, like Century City. I don't know if you've ever seen, there's like this like huge wooden tower that has flowers painted all over it.
Yeah.
It's like near like a high school. That's an oil well. If you've ever been to the Beverly Center.
Yeah, sure.
Actually out back, like it's completely concealed, but they drill for oil there.
So it's protected where you can't see it.
Yeah. And there's a few other places like around the west side of town. Like there's I'm trying to remember what street it's on, but it's like this huge brick building. And it looks like an 8 or 9 story like brick office building. And if you were to go inside of it, there are no floors. It's this massive hollow shell that's, you know, basically houses oil wells.
Gotcha.
It's crazy the amount of oil that comes out from underneath the city.
It's funny because that ties into what the show's about, you know, the public transportation aspect, how you can be car free in Los Angeles and get around. And, you know, obviously, you know, when you're using public transportation, you know, you're still moving electrically and with fuel, et cetera, but it's not as excessive. Now, the fact that you're bringing all of this up is pretty surreal because, you know, here's the back of Beverly Center where there's oil being pumped and it's blocked and you can't see it. And at the same time, people don't see that and they don't see the red line. Some people still don't know we have a subway. And that amazes me. I mean, because you've been using it to get around from downtown Hollywood for your work.
Yeah.
I mean, religiously when you can.
Yeah.
And you're an advocate for it. I mean, you don't mind using it.
I mean, yeah. You know, and another thing that's hidden that I think a lot of people don't notice. Maybe they do when they're sitting in traffic and they're just looking around. But I never noticed them until I was like walking on the sidewalks was those like big green pipes that are sticking up out of the ground, like with the vents. Those are all, I think they're like safety valves.
Sure.
for natural gas lines and things around town.
Right. So that's like that's the end of the line right there. And that's where the valves are. So
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot going on out there that we don't know about or take the time to learn about, should I say. One thing I'm amazed is that the fact you worked with Devo.
Yes, I didn't get to shoot a video for them, but I did shoot some viral pieces for them.
Yeah, tell us about that. I brought that up because, you know, we talked about Metallica and Disturbed, mm-hmm. actual video production. So this was viral pieces.
Yeah, this was stuff that I got to do under a creative director over. There's an agency in New York called Mother.
Okay.
And they had like come up with like this like really elaborate sort of viral campaign for the last album that Devo put out. And the idea behind it was that they were going to focus group the thing into the ground. Like,
wow.
You know, they put out like a list of songs online and, you know, let people pick what tracks were going to be on the record. And so anyways,
it was very interactive.
Yes.
With like, their fan base.
Yeah. And I think they were probably trying to say something about, you know, democratizing something to the point that it perhaps becomes mediocre. Like, you know, when you take all the decisions out of the hands of an artist and sort of let capitalism optimize everything, you know, you get what you get. So I think that was the message. I may be a little off, but yeah. So I just shot these like really surreal, like focus group pieces, like where they had like the Swedish guy sitting behind a curtain with a clipboard, and he was like on a television that they would wheel out in front of like these very strange people that I recommended. We did most of our casting off of Craigslist because I thought we would find the most interesting people there. You know,
sure.
Like wrote up this weird little paragraph, like, you know, do people not understand you? Do you have something to say to the world? Like, and that's how we got a lot of our actors for that.
So,
but I did get to shoot. I got to shoot Mark doing Boogie Boy, which was awesome. Like he put on the mask and did this whole thing.
Wow, that's legendary.
We shot some tests for it. Like I got to go up to Mutado, and we set up a green screen. And set up a desk. Like we were gonna do like a series of like little communiques where he was speaking as Boogie Boy about the album. So I got to like set up this desk and you know, like rummage through like his personal artifacts and like dress the set, you know.
He was in full character for that. Talking about the new record. That's pretty funny.
He had the mask and everything.
Now, when you use the term viral pieces, how much did you shoot and how much got used?
I think it was like two or three of these little focus group pieces that we put together.
Right.
And then the Boogie Boy stuff like wound up just sort of being something that didn't fit into like what the agency was doing.
Right.
So
you've also been instrumental. I mean, in addition to doing videos and viral pieces, you've always been instrumental in working with bands and creating their visuals for their tours.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
That's true. I got to work with Mastodon for Crack the Sky.
Yeah.
We basically kind of, it was kind of an interesting concept, like, you know, because it's this insane, you know, concept album about like, you know, this boy who's trapped in a wheelchair, who astral projects out of his body, becomes lost, like encounters Rasputin, like there's a fight with the devil. It goes all over the place. And it was such an epic thing to try to wrap my head around, like, you know, how are we going to create visuals for that? And I thought one way we could do it was to basically make it look like a silent film from the 1920s. So, you know, we shot everything on green screen and then created a lot of matte paintings and did like really sort of primitive old school effects and like made it very stylized so that we were able to create a lot of footage, but kind of do it like within a budget at the same time.
Well, I'm going to give a testimony. I mean, I was at both shows at the Palladium, and they were on tour with Death Clock.
Yeah.
And Converge.
Mm-hmm. And it was a good show.
Yeah, it was a great full night of metal and hard music. But I mean, Mastodon, you know, was definitely the jewel that shined, because not only were they great, but I mean, in back of this, you know, the stage had a huge screen, and these visuals in between songs were taking place as well as during the songs. And it kind of like was like the glue that kind of like, you know, pressed all the songs together from the record, and you could see the visuals of what they're saying verbally. So, and where the music takes you, and it was pretty heavy, you know? I mean, it's very, I mean, the aesthetic, it just, it was really cool. It reminded me at times, like the noises and like the stars you would see, like reminded me of, you know, something at Disneyland in like the 70s or something. It was just really, really cool, you know? And it was really, at the same time, very relevant. So, I mean, as for something like that, I mean, how much time do you have to work on something like that?
We shot all the live action stuff like in a day. And then you were asking me what the longest project I worked on was. That would have been it, I think. It was like...
The post was probably unreal, right?
It was a month. I actually did all the posts myself on it.
You did the post on that also?
Yeah, I composited, like, keyed and comped every one of those shots. I had a matte painter, but I had to put all the shots together myself. And then I was just doing them one after another and, like, handing them off to an editor. I think we put, like, 200 scenes together or something crazy.
Wow.
So
And what about other artists have you worked with on a visual level for live shows?
Let me think about that. I've worked under some people doing some stuff for, like, I did some pieces for No Doubt.
Right.
When they got back together. Under Sophie Muller, who is one of the great music video directors of our time. If you go back to the 90s and you start thinking about some of the best things out there, like she did, like, you know, the Blur Song Number 2 video, Venus Is a Boy for Bjork, most of Don't Speak for No Doubt, like all these, like, really, really visually just gorgeous, conceptually tight videos she was responsible for. And I've had the pleasure of getting to see her work, you know, by working as an effects artist.
Oh, wow.
You know, under other effects artists or alongside. So that's what I do now when I'm not directing, is I supervise visual effects for music videos or commercials.
Now, as far as a visual effects person, what videos have you done visual effects for?
I'm trying to think of stuff that I've gotten to work. I do a lot of beauty work too.
Wow.
So, you know, just clean up and
very eclectic
touch up stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm trying to think of stuff. Like, I got to work on an Usher video last year, J-Lo. I've got to work on, like, a job for Joseph Kahn this year for this Indian singer named Priyanka Chopra.
Mm-hmm.
Got to work on that. That was cool. You know, and then I work on, like, smaller stuff. There's a band, I believe it's pronounced Miss Mister. It's like MSMR.
Uh-huh.
I had to, there's cheerleaders in it that are vomiting. they're supposed to be throwing up glitter.
Right.
So I got to make a glitter vomit for a week. That was great fun.
Now, what about the Green Day video? I mean, like, that was pretty recent. I mean, it was more recent than...
Yeah. Yeah, last year was pretty busy.
The stuff we're talking about.
Yeah, last year I think I did like 9 or 10 videos.
Were you a Green Day fan at all?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Like, yeah. I mean, that takes me back to like, what, like 7th or 8th grade.
Yeah.
I date myself. But yeah, no, like Kerplunk was like one of my favorite records. So.
Lookout Records.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then they did Dookie and they sold out. You know,
But they were still
how
great
we
though.
Thought when we were but, like 14. Yeah, which but is ridiculous.
But they were still great in, you know, on those major label records.
Oh, no, absolutely. That's I'm echoing like the sentiments of like, you know,
the punk
14 year olds that
being pissed
everything.
Off in his basement.
Exactly. Yeah.
This sucks. They're not on, you know, Lookout no more. They're on a major label.
No, and that record was great.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
one's still amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, that's another one where you're just kind of like, I can't believe I'm getting to work with this band.
Right.
So, but, you know, Metallica and Green Day, they're both bands where it's like, I'm really stoked that I got to work with them. I'm a little bummed I didn't get to shoot, like, performance for them. So
because they're both so performance-driven.
Yeah.
That's, like, something you want to be a part of if you get to work with them.
Yeah, and right. that's, you know... I did an Alice in Chains video in December.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's very recent. You did that in December.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now,
well, I just got back from the desert. We just shot a video.
Right.
Which I'm really excited about because I got to shoot the band.
And so that's for an upcoming record.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the name of the song?
The song's called Stone.
Stone.
So.
And what's the concept?
I don't know if I'm... allowed to well, talk well, that well, much
well,
about
well, well,
it.
Let's say this. Let's say this.
Let's say
you shot
we went
in the
out
desert.
To the desert.
Okay.
And it looks fucking awesome.
Right.
It's like anamorphic. It's beautiful. Like it looks great. I'm really excited about it.
And that's something you directed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is it finished or is it in post?
We're working on it right now. Yeah. We actually sat down and we're putting the performance bed together, and then tomorrow we're going to be working with the narrative and the B-roll. So.
Do you know when that video is set to premiere? Is there a deadline?
We
should see it soon, right?
Yeah. We should be delivering before the end of the month. So it should be out soon.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean,
they look great. They're killer performers.
Yeah, last time I saw them, they played with the Deftones, and you did a video for them. So it's like this ongoing, you know, one degree of separation with Robert Jobert. Like,
yeah, things just snowball. I think, you know, I got to work with Deftones. I got to work with Coheed. I'm working with Alice in Chains. You know, and they all share a management company. So, mm-hmm. you know, once you do something one person likes, you know, get a recommendation and
right.
gets to another job screw it up, which is awesome.
This business, you do good work, people ask you, mm-hmm. you know, to keep working. But the Donnas.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, I think that was great. That was one of the earlier ones.
I think that was the last album they ever put out.
Right,
but it was one of my earlier videos.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
sure.
The Metal Kids.
I think that's around the time. I think I met you around that time.
Yeah,
yeah, and I was working at Starbucks.
Yeah, you know, true story. You know, I work at a record label called Southern Lord. 9 years. And we're in East Hollywood, and my ritual coming in from the downtown area would be like, get on the Red Line, get off on Hollywood and Western, and go get my daily fix of iced coffee. And I met Robert. You know, this was 2004, because that was the first year I started working there.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I came in one day with a Black Flag shirt with the police story. You know, I had the gun in the cop's mouth.
Yeah.
And you're like, right. Nice.
That's right.
It says, make me come, faggot. It's like a comic bubble, and you know, you don't see those too much. And we just start talking. Oh, Black Flag, yeah, cool. You know, punk rock, this and that, skateboard, you know, music.
Yep.
One thing led to another. I'd see you every day, and told you what my gig was, working at a label, and I played in a band.
That's right. You'd always come in with like these stacks of envelopes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What are you mailing?
Totally.
These records.
Yeah, totally. And it was exciting. It was like, you know. But then one day it was just like, hey, you know, I'm doing a video for the Meat Puppets or the B-52s. And you were still working at Starbucks, which was very admirable. Like, you kept your job and you didn't get like consumed by the glitz of like being attached to, you know, these known artists. And, you know, you just kept it very real and you were seemed very centered and balanced. And one day you said, hey, that's it.
Yeah, one day I was able to, I was starting to get enough like freelance work, you know, doing effects
sure.
or this or that where I didn't have to do it as much. And, you know, it's just, you know, that job was cool and it gave me health insurance and all of those great things. But at the same time,
and
you know,
they do take care of their employees very
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, nothing of great things to say about that yeah. experience, right? Working at Starbucks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It just, you know, just got to the point for me where I just, you know, needed so much flexibility. And,
right.
And, but, you know, really nice people. Actually, you were talking about the Donnas. One of the girls came in a few days after the shoot, and I was like, you know, serving her coffee.
Are you serious?
Yes.
So you didn't know them before you directed the video?
No.
You just did the video?
No. Yeah, I got it from, like, on the recommendation of a commissioner. I think I'd done, like, it was either, like, because of Blood Brothers or, like, I did, like, a Mates Estate video or,
right.
or something like that. And that's
how many days later did she come in and get her coffee?
Oh, like 2 or 3 days later.
So you were like, fresh in her mind.
Yeah.
And she recognized you?
I don't know. She may have been polite and pretended to not recognize me. But I can only imagine that it would shake the confidence of an artist to like see your director pouring you coffee.
So you just directed this video for the Donnas, and 2 days later, like on a recommendation, like here's our video budget, we're gonna get Robert Schober, you know,
who nobody knew who that was
at the time,
right?
And then 2 days later, you know, yeah, we did the video, can't wait to see it. You know, you're a work in progress. You're thinking of how it's going to turn out, yep. And then they walk into Starbucks and they see their director behind the counter.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the beauty of it, though. I mean, it's
yeah,
like
it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, that is very amazing, and you know, it doesn't mean the thing. It just means that you're very responsible. You know, you're showing up the next day or two to meet your. You know, the demand of working to survive and stay above water. Cause at the time you weren't doing much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I had to do something. I mean, it's kind of a crazy thing to, you know, show up in LA,
right.
Not know anybody, not have
and actually,
any background in this either.
No, you know, friends, like no family.
It, trying to figure it out. You know, I had a girlfriend who was incredibly supportive. You know, this girl that I met out here, in LA, and we were together for many years. Like, you know, she supported me throughout it. So, you know, I'm very thankful for that. I think that's a huge part.
That's great.
Of why I was able to stay out here and do what I did. You know, obviously, like, I worked as much as I could and contributed, but, you know, yeah, it's tough because you kind of do have to try to put yourself into it as full-time as possible.
I mean, when in this industry, I think whether it's, you know, directing videos or producing records, anything connected to that, it's not only the ability, having the skill, but it's another job to actually connect with people and create relationships and then get their attention enough to have them have enough faith in you to give you a job and then deliver the goods. Right?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. So it's really, I mean, you can't learn this stuff in college, right?
No. No. I didn't learn anything in college.
Right, right. And
I mean, I did, but it was cool shit that I probably didn't have to, you know.
It's all from actually doing it.
Yeah.
And just living it and signing up for it and committing. And I think one thing a lot of people don't know is when you just don't know the entertainment industry and what comes along with it, they really don't teach it to you in school, and you really have to go and figure things out for yourself and figure it out if it's for you. But I think the most important thing is just be willing to work hard and building a foundation, right? Putting the walls up, you know, binding everything and then putting the roof on top.
Yep.
You know, before you could, you know, you want to walk before you run. And obviously, you know, it seems like once you hit a certain pinnacle, you know, you were being sought after more by bands like Metallica and Green Day. And now fast forward, here you are, you know. That being said, what about some of your favorite venues to see bands? I mean, you direct so many videos. Do you get to break out a lot and, you know, get out of the place and your house or apartment and see live music?
Well, you know, like I said, I used to enjoy going to Spaceland a lot, which obviously it's been a while. The Smell.
Okay.
I like to go to The Smell.
That's right off of what? That's Maine. That's the 18 bus. Maine, that's between 3rd and 2nd, right? Yep.
Yeah. Where else is cool? Pear Space.
You like Pear Space?
Yep. It's a good question. What was the, you know, I really liked coming out to see your shows at the Thai
place. The Relax Bar.
You like
the shows I used to throw.
It was great. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty, pretty groundbreaking at the time because you even said this, one time you're passing by. You said, you know, I did a thrash show with, I want to say it was Agent Steel and Avatar, all these old East LA thrash bands.
Yeah,
and you were blown away by the kids that were there and how were they dressed. It was so authentic to the early 80s thrash metal.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had the safety pins and, you know, there was a process that went behind that and you took up an appreciation for the work that goes on. You know, behind that look, you know, you had those director eyes. So you were just kind of like, wow, there's a metal show here. And everyone looks like they're really from the 80s and their clothes are like torn and, you know,
But yeah, I mean, it's such a cool look and like to see like kids like seeing that and like appreciating it and like still doing it.
It's, yeah. It's yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I did 250 shows at the Relax Bar.
No way.
Yeah. Jeez. Over 4 years. And I'm proud of every one of them.
It's crazy.
Yeah. The ones where no one showed up and the ones where we had to, you know, turn away, you know, had 200 people at the door and had to turn away another 200 people.
Yeah, that's right.
Municipal waste.
I was at a bit of both. Yeah. I was at ones where
we had that one.
There were 6 people and there were ones where
totally packed. Yeah. And that was it. Like, you know, my approach was to be fair. There was no pay to play. There was no, you know, no nepotism. It was like, you contact me, everyone gets a shot. And if you don't bring no one, you're not going to be banned. I'll book you again. It's just all about like creating, you know, just a place for a platform in Hollywood that people could be treated fairly. And maybe it wasn't the best business model in the eyes of some of the places that do practice pay to play. But for me, at the end of the day, you know, when you average out the books, you know, just by kind of going in with a positive attitude and letting people do what they do, no one ever lost their ass. you know, so it's kind of like, you know, just it had a lot of finesse to it. So I'm glad you got something out of it.
That's the only way you should conduct yourself, you know, be nice, be fair.
Just be nice and be fair.
It works.
Yeah. And when you're so rigid, I mean, things just get thrown out of whack, mm-hmm. you know. But anyways, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
We're going to listen to Metallica because all that Metallica talk. You know, Robert directing the video and all that good stuff, having dinner with the band at the Forum. That's pretty fun. So here's some Metallica, and we're going to play some other tunes. We'll recap what we played when we get back. Thanks. All right. Welcome back to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis. In studio guests, Robert Schober, a.k.a. Robo Schober. Robo Schobo. I got like tongue-tied. You know what? At the break, you were telling me about some cool stuff you do at night. You're like a vampire.
Yes.
You walk out of your apartment and on your, you know, people could go to your Instagram and see all the cool pictures you take around Los Angeles. Tell us where they could see that at.
Yes. Some people take blood. I take pictures.
And what's your Instagram?
It's Robo Schobo, R-O-B-O-S-H-O-B-O. I love to walk around LA and I take a lot of photos.
So we could see them all there, your evening photos.
And I find lots and lots of fun stuff when I'm scouting for film shoots, when I'm just walking around neighborhoods. I stop to take a lot of photos.
Very nice.
I have about 2,000 photos.
So you're serious about it?
Yes. I took a lot of photos last year. So if people want to see like behind the scenes photos from shoots, got a lot of those. You just want to see.
Of all your productions with like, you know, some of the videos
stuff
you're making.
Green Day, there's some Alice in Chains stuff on there.
That's like some pretty exclusive footage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's really fun to get to kind of be an insider and, you know, see the other side of it.
So let's talk about, your connection to mine. We know we met at Starbucks and then we actually, you know, didn't see each other for a while. And ironically, I would see you on the Red Line. So, you know, you're very versed in public transportation. I wanted to ask you for the remainder of the show, when you go out, you know, just around where you live, I mean, can you turn anyone on to some of your favorite coffee shops or restaurants that you like to go to?
Yes, I can.
Tell us, Robert.
I'm just going completely blank. Let me see. There's actually a new place that's opened in my neighborhood, which I believe if you get off at Sunset in Vermont, isn't too far of a walk.
You would just go north on Vermont?
Yeah. It's over in Hyperion. It's called Hyperion Public. It's a nice little restaurant in front, and then in the back, it's got a cool bar. Let me see what else is nearby in that area. I like the Drawing Room a lot. You go to the Drawing Room?
Yeah, in Los Feliz.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good bar.
Yeah, it's always fun. Their karaoke nights are pretty amazing too.
Really? So they're kind of they're kind of unique.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
It's cool. Like the music they'll play. Like their selections for karaoke are pretty amazing.
Not really your regular run of the mill karaoke list.
Yeah. Yeah, a little unexpected. There's like Exodus on there one time, which I thought was a little crazy.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, saw a guy do this really kind of amazing sort of lounge rendition of In Bloom.
The Nirvana song off Nevermind.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
That's cool. You know,
it's a fun place.
The Red Line Sunset Vermont station, you know, if you just, you know, go up to the street and walk north, you'll see Griffith Park. Mm-hmm. 12 o'clock, dead end. But on Vermont, there's so many amazing places. There's a Dresden. Mm-hmm. There's the, you know, if you want to, you know, like in a coffee shop mood, there's the Polly's Pies.
Yep. Oh, you reminded me.
House of Pies, I'm sorry.
Yep. House of Pies. Yep. If you get off at one of my favorite subway stops is to get off at Sunset and Vine, go to the Frolic Room.
Oh, yeah.
Where Bukowski, like, drank himself to death.
Right across street. Is the Frolic Room. To the right of that, facing the front door, is the Pantages. So you could also like go to the Frolic Room and go see a play, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can really get around town pretty easily with finesse and not like having to like worry about parking your car and pulling out.
Because we used to go there. So, you know, we would then like walk up to the Hollywood Bowl to like avoid parking.
Right.
And stuff. Go see a show and then come back to the Frolic Room and get trashed and then ride home or walk.
Yeah, you know what's cool during the summer is like, now I've done this and it could be done. You know, I'm just trying to set the blueprint for everybody, get them inspired. Like a Sunday, mm-hmm. you go to a Dodger game, okay? Say like you want to go to a Dodger game, 12:30 game, you're out of there by 3:30. Here's what's killer. You have tickets to the Dodger game, you have tickets to see something at the Hollywood Bowl. It could be a concert, it could be the LA Philharmonic under the stars. So it's like however you get to Union Station, which is like Red Line going southbound or Gold Line going, you know, northbound to Union Station. There's a shuttle. You go to the Dodger game. You know, we know that what the deal is. It's a free ride. It takes you to the front gate. You see the Dodger game. You come back to Union Station, get on the Red Line, take it to Hollywood and Highland for that 6:30 Hollywood Bowl concert or 7 o'clock. And, you know, you obviously you have a day pass if you're traveling. It's $5. You get off on Hollywood and Highland, and then they have a shuttle that takes you to the front door of the Hollywood Bowl. So, I mean, you could really do, like, you know, a lot geographically if you know how and are patient to learn to know how. I'm not sure if you've ever done things that way, but I have.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, you know, we'd either walk up to the bowl or we'd do the shuttle, like, from Hollywood and Highland, which is fun. I used to go visit Long Beach, like on the Blue Line.
On the Blue Line.
Go down to the aquarium.
It's a different dynamic every line, right?
It is.
Tell us about that experience.
It's cool riding out there. Some really kind of interesting, like, scenery.
On the way to the water.
Oh, yeah. Like seeing, like, there's, like, you know, train yards or, like, industrial areas where you just see, like, odd things being kept in mass quantities.
A lot of industrial, but then also a lot of different neighborhoods that don't.
You can like see into people's backyards. Like you get to see these neighborhoods like right against the tracks that are cool. I've also seen some really sort of interesting like homemade shelters and homes that people have built like along the river or near some of those yards.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and you know it's also pretty. Funny to me is the way the Blue Line is kind of like a wild train, it's kind of like one of those in the Old West when there was a train that got loose. What was it called? It was in the cowboy days. Yeah, runaway train.
Right.
At times it just starts going so fast and like you're on this huge bridge and there's like no railing. You're like, dude, are we gonna fly off? It's kind of wild, right?
Like. Yeah.
And then, you know, there's a bunch of characters getting off and on.
A lot of characters, yeah. And it stops in a lot of neighborhoods. Like, you know, every now and then it stops in a place out there that kind of feels like a small town.
Yeah. And you know, those are the outer skirts of Compton.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, LA is just so diverse. My experience, taking the... Blue Line is when I used to work at SST Records before Southern Lord. I used to work for Greg and Black Flag, and I would take from Pico Rivera. I would go like the 266 to the Green Line south on Rosemead in Norwalk Downey, get the Green Line three stops in, and then get the Blue Line just straight shot, and it drops you off right in the middle. But you would go to the aquarium.
Is Green Line the one that goes out to Redondo?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you would take it to go to the aquarium and such, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, was that like something that you did regularly or just like once or twice?
I used to basically any time that I wasn't working, I would buy myself a ticket and
venture
jump
out
on a train and go somewhere. You know, I'd always go downtown. I loved going out downtown.
Long Beach?
To see, like, how far the Yellow Line
would right.
go, how far the...
What other downtown Long Beach things would you visit? Was there anything else besides the aquarium that you would like to check in on that you showed interest to?
It was just getting near like the end. Like, I don't know if you call that downtown Long Beach.
That's what they call it, yeah.
Downtown. Just getting off and wandering. You know, there's some cool coffee houses and things that I found. There was like a vegan place that I ate at that was pretty good. But that was... I don't know, probably 5-6 years ago. So I'm not really remembering the names of any of those places.
Right. So but the Long Beach Aquarium of the Pacific, that's like a landmark place.
Awesome.
It's really great. I've been there once and I want to get out there more often, but it's just one of those places where you can just like look at one aquarium forever and just like eyeball these fish and how they live. And, you know, I grew up with aquariums in a house. So I know that. Mm-hmm. You have to be patient to take it all in. And yeah, I just wish, I could get out there more often. But I know what they do now is something called Night Dive. And it's like a thing for adults. And I think what it is like you go in the evening and it's set up kind of like a bar I'm not sure if they serve alcohol, but there's a DJ in a bar, I think.
Oh, very cool.
And the lights are off.
Natural History Museum would do those.
And you got the aquarium lights on. It's like a place, a night, you know, a place for people to go mingle.
Oh, that's very
cool. So I'm not too clear on all the details, but it seems like it's, you know, pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And I think people should check that out. There's a rad store, a record store in downtown Long Beach called Fingerprints. And they're on 4th Street. So if you took the blue line and got off like right before 4th Street, mm-hmm. I don't think it's a 4th Street exit or stop. Maybe it is, but I think it's like right before. But it's like, you know, walking half a block. Mm-hmm. You can visit Fingerprints. There's another record store called Third Eye Records that just opened up a while back. It's thriving. There's a great venue, Alex's Bar, kind of off the beaten path.
Yes.
You know about Alex's? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So,
just saw, I'm sure.
Who did you see?
This is kind of left field. Pedro the Lion.
Yeah.
Got Seattle back together band. And played.
Okay.
And played there.
So how long ago was that?
About a year ago.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was last year, actually.
Gotcha. What, I got a question for you. What bands have you not worked with that you want to work with?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or on a project, is there a project you want to work on that you haven't done?
There's a lot of bands that I would like to work with or people that I would like to work with. I think Morrissey would be.
I could see that.
Awesome to do something for.
Do you know about Morrissey and the phenomenon of all the Latino fans?
I do.
That's okay. There's your video.
When I moved out here,
I'll help you cast it.
Right.
We'll go to East LA.
There you go.
Well Heights. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, man, no one's done it.
Yeah. I remember I saw him at a show like at the Troubadour.
I saw him at Soundgarden last month.
Yeah.
The first night they had three nights. He was like right next to me.
Did he have his entourage of
five guys in
that
suits?
Kind of look like him?
Yeah. They all his
crazy.
Morrissey's entourage is like seven dudes that look like him, but like 4 inches taller and they're all like in nice suits. Mm-hmm. And they look like James Bond guys.
Yeah.
And they're like two guys in front of
them.
I saw
them. They were like, they're like 90s Morrissey, where he was like doing the rockabilly thing with the plaid. Like the
But that's his entourage.
Cowboy shirts, yeah.
I mean, what do you think is going on there? Do you want to read deep into it?
He's having a good time. He's enjoying life.
He's doing his thing, right?
He's doing his thing.
No, but I thought that was very odd that he was at Soundgarden. I mean, shouldn't be. Music's music, right?
Yeah.
Bringing up Morrissey, I mean, I'm not a Morrissey fan, but I know a lot of my Latino, Mexicano brethren have shifted that way.
What is the there's a sort of a ballad, sort of a singing style that he sounds similar to? Isn't that part of the popularity?
You know what? I want to look at in the 90s when the whole gang and tag banging explosion happened, and I lost all my friends, the gangs, and I was like the last one standing skateboarding and staying into music. Me and a handful of friends, I got to be honest with you, a lot of people that didn't want to go all the way into the gang mode got into what they called like party crews, and everyone adapted into this like rebel look with the boots and the Levi's and the white shirts and the slick back hair, and they were all into Smiths and Morrissey and Social Distortion, and it just went crazy from there. And, you know, I could give you more details, but it's actually something that hasn't been spoken about as it grew. You know, I mean, there was it took like 4 years for it to like establish, and it was, and you know, gangs were made out of that look. And it was really, you know, interesting to see that unfold through like young eyes, mm-hmm. and then see it carry on to now. Cause it's, you know, it has nothing to do with gang culture now, but it's like, I think growing up in Latino areas where there's gangs, there's that sense of, you want to be, have a sense of belonging. And that's why people got out of skateboarding, because it's an individualist kind of routine, you know. And I'm speaking from a Hispanic person from LA in that mix, mm-hmm. you know, and that's my perception of it. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's really very interesting, and we could get even more deep. But actually, we're out of time. Everyone, I want to give a big round of applause to my guest, Robert Schober. Directorial name, Robo Showboy, I said it correctly. Our in-studio photographer, Adam L. Murray. Adam, what's your Instagram? Adam L. Murray. Soundboard op, Jeremy Hansen. We got Salman Aga, professional skateboarder, and owner of Pizza Nista, coming up at 11 p.m. All right, call in, talk to Salmon, 800-893-9562.